Well, it's good to be with you all this Sunday. We were gone last Sunday, and thank you for the opportunity to celebrate our 10-year anniversary, a little vacation, weekend away. Really, much appreciation for Joyce Strickland. I've heard very good things about her time of sharing here last week. But this vacation that we were on, Sonia and I, you know, because we were celebrating this big anniversary, we wanted to give each other gifts, and it's, you know, I will admit that that's not something that we always do on anniversaries or birthdays for a number of reasons, perhaps because I'm just that cheap. I have made cards for her before. But, you know, for her, for the 10-year anniversary, we wanted to show just how much we really appreciated each other and how much we really knew each other. So I knew that she wanted a trip away for a weekend. And she probably didn't have to think too long and hard. She got me a new pair of Keens for our anniversary. And if you know me very well, you know that in the summer, I have two pairs of shoes that I wear. The ones that I wear on a Sunday morning and my Keens. So I have had the same pair of Keens for probably 5 years, half of our married life. And she thought it was about time to get a new pair. And she was right. I use those Keens for work, play, and yeah, for nice things too. I wore my old Keens to our Sunday or ice cream social last Tuesday evening. So they were it's time for them to be retired. But all of this celebration and this vacation, it really got me thinking about maybe one of the only few vacations that we took growing up. Now remember, I grew up on a dairy farm, so we couldn't get away for weekends or even a night away. You always had to feed the animals or milk the cows in the evening. Then you know what happens 12 hours later? They're hungry again. They need to be milked again. So we would often do little day trips here and there, but we never went away until I was about 10 years old. And when I was 10, we made the big trip to Florida and went to Disney World. My one and only trip to Disney World growing up at about 10 years of age. And this week I was thinking about this trip to Disney World, and I was remembering that when we were there, we took in a movie. Not just any kind of movie, a very special movie. It was a 3D movie. Now this might jog a few of your memories, because in the mid-1980s, there was a movie that Disney released along with some other production company, and it involved Michael Jackson and these space creatures. It was called Captain EO. Anybody remember Captain EO? It was a short 17-minute long 3D movie where Captain EO, played by Michael Jackson, and his band of alien friends, like the ones sitting on his shoulder. Ooh, careful. Sitting on his shoulder. Might have done that too, I don't know. Sitting on his shoulder, they go and they save the world from the evil, wicked princess through song and dance. Right? It was very realistic. Michael Jackson, Captain EO. So I remember going to this movie as a young man, 10 years old, and as I mentioned, it was, actually I think it's the only 3D movie I've ever seen. So as you walk into the movie theaters, they give you those stylish glasses. Has anybody ever seen a 3D movie before? A few of you. Okay, a number of you. So I walk in, and as I'm handed these 3D glasses, the kind people at Disney, they tell all of the children and all of the adults, if you find yourself getting nauseous, or if you find yourself being scared, frightened because of these strange animals that are flying out at you, if you find yourself sick, nauseous, or scared, all you have to do to make this three-dimensional movie return to two dimensions is close one eye. Did you know that? Just close one eye, it becomes two dimensions instantly. Now, I don't remember much about this movie. Actually, the only thing I remembered was that it was Michael Jackson and that strange thing that kept flying around the whole time. I don't remember much about the plot of the movie I don't remember much at all about the movie. But what I recall is that during that time, the inner scientist in me wanted to figure out how this 3D movie thing worked. So as the movie began and these objects started flying around and Michael Jackson does his high kicks and it's coming right off the screen right at you, I started to experiment by taking off my glasses. I did the things like closed the one eye and I covered one eye and I did things to try to mess with my vision a little bit, trying to figure out how this thing worked. Now, I didn't figure it out at the time, but I did a little research when I returned home, and that was back before the days of the internet. So I did a little bit of research, and I tried to find out how do these 3D movies work. And when I had taken off my glasses during that movie, I realized that everything was now blurry. If you take off the glasses, you see two things. It looks kind of like there's one object and it's outlined in another color. And I found out that the reason that that's blurry and it looks normal with the glasses is not because these glasses have any kind of correctional lens in them. But what it is when they film a 3D movie, they have two cameras set side by side. Each camera videos the thing that's going on, the thing that's in front of it, from a slightly different perspective. And then they have it set up so that each of those images are overlaid, and then one of those colors filters out the other. Then when your mind sees those two different images from slightly different perspective, through those two different colors, they come together as one, and it becomes a three-dimensional image. Now, I don't know exactly how this works. I don't know the science behind it, but I want to do a little experiment here as we begin this morning to show you how it works, because I think you've probably all realized this at some point in your life or another. What I want you to do is, everybody, hold up your index finger and put it about 6 inches away from your nose. Now I want you to look at that index finger with one eye. And now switch to the other eye really quickly. And switch back. And switch to the other eye. Back and forth, back and forth. Your eyes, you can stop now or keep going if that's entertaining. Your eyes function as cameras to your brain. And when you look at it, you've got these two eyes set at slightly different angles, and you're concentrating on the same thing. When you do that, it makes the finger seem to jump around a bit, doesn't it? It doesn't hold still. Maybe that's because you drank too much coffee this morning. No, if you hold your finger perfectly still and switch back and forth between your eyes, it still jumps around. That's because each of your eyes gives a different perspective on the same object. Now, I know a number of you wear correctional lenses, perhaps contacts or glasses. I wear contact lenses. And on a number of times, I have lost one of my contacts. Back before we got these packs of six, and they were rather disposable, I had the old rigid gas permeable contacts. And if you lost one, you got in big trouble from mom and dad, and you had to wait a few weeks until they could make a new one. So when I would lose a contact, being the vain person that I was, I didn't want to put on those big glasses that I had in the 1980s, so I would often walk around with one contact. If you've ever done that, or maybe if you wear glasses and you've lost one of the lenses out of your glasses, you know that if you try to reach for something like this glass of water, that often your depth perception is off. If you reach for it, you can knock it right off the table into the computer and cause all the more problem. You see, when we can approach something from two slightly different angles, when we can see them from very close positions but different positions, often we can see them better. Now, this summer, I asked the congregation to do me a big favor. And I want to thank you all for doing that today. I asked you to participate in a pastoral evaluation. And I got many responses and many good things were said. I thank you so much for the words of affirmation and also the words of growing points as well. This is what I was looking for. I wanted to know how you thought I could do better as a pastor. Because believe it or not, I do want to get better at this job. I want to continue to progress. I want to continue to grow. And I hope you all want to continue to grow as Christians as well. So this was one way of finding out where you think I'm doing well and where I can grow. And one of the things that you all lifted out, a number of you lifted out, was that I have done a really good job over the years of presenting and preaching from the Bible from an Anabaptist Mennonite perspective. But many people also said that you didn't grow up in the Mennonite church. That there are many people in this church that are transplants from other denominations and other faith traditions. And these people were saying, it'd be good every now and then to hear a little bit about the church that I grew up in. To hear a little bit of how people from my faith tradition read this passage. And I thought about that a little bit and I thought, yeah, you know what? That would be really interesting to me as well. So I thought about the people of this congregation. I thought about the congregations and the denominations that you folks come from. And I started wondering, why is it that you feel so comfortable worshiping here at Stanton Mennonite Church? And as I started thinking about this, I thought of the theologians and the scholars that have influenced me in my theology. And, you know, to make this kind of interesting, I'm going to offer some points to anybody that can name these men. 5 points if you can name this person, and those 5 points will go towards absolutely nothing at all. But at the end of the day, you can say you won. This is one of the scholars who has influenced me greatly. Any guesses? Perhaps you've heard me say the name N.T. Wright. Nicholas Thomas Wright. N.T. Wright is a former bishop of Durham. He is a member of the Anglican Church in England. Now, we have a number of people in this congregation that come out of an Episcopalian background. And my understanding is that the Episcopalian Church began at the time of the American Revolution, and it is rooted in the Anglican tradition. One of the greatest theologians, greatest influences in my theology is an Anglican priest. Next guy. Even more points. You get 10 points if you can not only name this guy, but say his name right. Susan's. Stanley Hauerwas. Hauerwas, a good German name. Stanley Hauerwas is a now retired professor from Duke Divinity School. And Duke Divinity is a church of the United, or is a school of the United Methodist Church. Stanley Hauerwas is one of the most influential theologians, not only in the Mennonite church, not only in my life, but in the world today. And this one is going to be quite a bit harder. I quoted him a few weeks ago, and any guesses? This is David Fitch. Now, David Fitch is a really interesting fellow. He teaches at a Baptist seminary in Chicago. He is an ordained minister in the Christian and Missionary Alliance Church, and he self-identifies as an Anabaptist. So these are three of the faith traditions that are represented in our congregation on any given Sunday: Episcopalian, United Methodist Church, and Christian and Missionary Alliance. So as I thought about the way these individuals have influenced me, I thought, wouldn't it be great if we could spend 1 week looking at each of these denominations and trying to better understand why they believe what we believe, what they believe, and why they don't believe some of the things that we believe. So I want to take the month of August, and I'm just going to take a week and look at the Episcopalian Church. Take a week and look at the United Methodist Church, and a week at Christian and Missionary Alliance Church. I'm going to say, what can we learn from them, and what can they perhaps learn from us? And because that's only 3 weeks out of the month, I want to spend a fourth week and look at the Presbyterian Church. Because this fall I'm going to take a class at Union Presbyterian Seminary, and I have a tendency to put my foot in my mouth. It'd be really good for me to do a little bit of background research on the Presbyterian Church. So this is what I hope to do during the month of August. But for today, what I want to do with our time remaining this morning is to just ask the question, why? Why do we learn, why should we learn from people of other faith traditions? Why try to understand other Christian groups? And the first thing I want to do is point us back to that opening story. It did have a purpose, the story about my 3D glasses. And the point that I want to lift out is that Christians from other denominations view the same thing or person, that is Jesus, from a different angle. And when we look at something from a slightly different angle, we can often get a better understanding for that object. Now, we've probably all heard stories from the book of Exodus. Exodus is a common theme in churches. And I grew up hearing stories about the Exodus, about how Moses led the Israelites out of captivity, out of Egypt, and into the promised land. Well, Moses didn't go into the promised land, led them right up to the river before the promised land. So I've heard this story many times. But it wasn't until I was a young adult and I heard this story preached on by a person from a different background than me, that it really opened my eyes and helped me better understand this story. You see, many denominations we differentiate based on our geography and our ethnicity. For instance, if you were born in Germany, let's say the 19th century, you were probably what denomination? Probably Lutheran. If you were born in England during that time, you're probably Anglican. Born in Italy during that time, you're probably Catholic. So a lot of the times, our denominations are influenced by our ethnicity, our color, our background. So this individual that I heard preaching on the Exodus that day was a man of color. He was an African-American man. And as he began to tell the story of his family and their experience as slaves here in the United States, this entire story of Moses leading the people out of slavery, God providing Moses the way to lead them out of slavery in Egypt, he just told the story in such a way that I just couldn't even comprehend. As a privileged white male of European background, I couldn't even comprehend where he was coming from. But when he came to the end, I could see that he was able to shine a new light on this story. And I gained from hearing him tell it. A slightly different angle shed new light on this old, old story. And the second reason why we should try to understand other Christian groups is because without unity in the church, our witness to the world suffers. Now, Garland read the story for us from John 17. And John 17 is just this long. He mentioned that was all in red. The whole chapter, I believe, is probably in red in books that have Jesus' words written in red. It begins with Jesus praying for himself. He prays, God, you know, may I be glorified so that you may be glorified. Jesus knows that his time on earth is coming to an end, and he really wants this act. He knows he's going to come to his demise, and he wants that act to bring glory to God. Jesus then prays for his disciples, the 12 close followers of his. He says, may they not be influenced by the world so that they can be leaders in the world. And then he turns to the broader church, and he prays for all believers. He prays, may they be one. He prays this in verse 21. He says, Father, just as you are in me and I am in you, may they also be in us so that the world may believe that you have sent me. Just as I am in you and you are in me. Can we get any more unified than the manifestation of God incarnate here on earth and God the Father? That is as unified as possible. And Jesus prays, may those disciples, may those followers be as we are, God. May they have that same sense of unity. Now, Jesus was a very practical guy. He had the ability to see what was going on around him. And he knew that those disciples that he had called, those 12 men, they were as diverse as any group of people could be. We had people across the theological and political spectrums. There were the people that were affiliated with the Roman government, and there were the people that wanted to overthrow the Roman government. All across the spectrum, he called them together and called them to unity. And Jesus even goes so far as to say in verse 23, so that they may be brought to complete unity. And I looked those words up in the Greek just to try to get a better understanding of what Jesus is saying when he calls for complete unity. And you know what those words mean when you translate them from the original Greek language? It means complete unity. I don't really know what that means, but this is what Jesus is calling his disciples to. This is his prayer, that they may be one just as he and the Father are one. Now, I also need to mention that even though Jesus and the Father are one, there are times when there was some disagreement in their will. When Jesus stood in the Garden of Gethsemane on the night when he was to be betrayed and handed over to the Roman officials, he prayed, God, not my will, but your will be done. And that shows that they had differing wills. Jesus had a mind of his own. He had a will of his own. But yet he says he and the Father are one. So even though there's this call for unity, I don't fully know what unity means. But I know that what we have seen in the church in the last 500 years or so, this splintering off, this many denominations rising up for things that many times seem trivial to me, that is not what Jesus has called us to. Some of you know Harvey Yoder. Harvey Yoder is a counselor in Harrisonburg. And Harvey Yoder grew up locally here in Augusta County as a part of the Beachy Amish Church. And Harvey had this published in a denominational newspaper recently. He said this, Harvey wrote, "Today there are 12 different Mennonite subgroups in Rockingham County alone, and there are signs of even more church divorces to come. I find this multiplicity of divisions beyond embarrassing." Beyond embarrassing. And I do too. It's not only embarrassing, it is unfaithful to what Jesus has called us to. And if you look back to the original split between what is now the Old Order Mennonite Church and what we now know as the Mennonite Church USA or Virginia Mennonite Conference, that split was over whether or not to have Sunday school. It goes back to that. Now, I believe if you think about it, there's some theology behind it. Because the people that didn't want Sunday school said, well, if we have Sunday school and the church, well, then the parents will stop teaching it back at home. They'll stop teaching the Bible. There was reasons behind it. I don't want to make it too minute. But yet, when I look at it today, I think that was what caused this first major split. Is that really what it means to be one? And we look at all the little things from that down the line, issues with head coverings and plain coats and whether we should have cell phones or not have cell phones. Some of these divisions, they're almost laughable if they weren't so sad. This is not what it means to be faithful to Jesus. This is not what it means to be one. Now, saying that, I want to admit today, and I'm going to go a little long, but Garland gave me permission. I want to admit today that there are times when I understand that it is necessary to split. There are times when other churches and other people just want to go and do their own thing. They will not submit to the biblical witness. They will not submit to authority. And they may become more and more acculturated and more in line with what society is saying and doing. I understand that there are definitely times when that is necessary. To be honest, I'm glad that the Protestant church split from the Catholic church. I don't think that was a bad thing. If we use Paul's analogy of the Bible, of the church as being the body of Christ, there are times when the best thing for the body is to have an amputation. But my concern and what I believe Jesus is teaching and praying for his disciples here is that we should not make that decision too quickly. It might be helpful if you go somewhere and you kick your foot on the counter or on the corner somewhere and you stub your toe. It might take the pain away if you amputate your entire leg, right? Your toe's not going to hurt anymore if your entire leg is missing. But we should not amputate our leg over a stubbed toe. This should be a major decision if such divisions do occur. So I want to ask this question. What does it look like to work toward complete unity in Christ? Especially when we don't even know what that phrase means, this complete unity. What does it mean? To be honest, I don't know. But what I do know is it takes work. When there are people that disagree about things, even when they seem so trivial to us as to whether or not to have Sunday school, whether or not to have head coverings or plain coats, these people are very much invested in these beliefs. And it is hard for us to sometimes understand why people believe the things they do. But we are called to have conversation and communion with one another. So I say, I don't know what it means to work for complete unity, but I believe that understanding the perspective of others is the first step toward this unity. I tell people, I understand if you disagree with me. I can understand why people might not. Let's take an. You said I could go long. I understand why some people may not understand why I advocate for absolute pacifism at times. I get that. But my thing is, I want you to be able to understand my perspective, and I want to be able to understand your perspective. If you simply brush me off because I'm crazy or I'm out there, I'm a lunatic, then that's not being faithful to Jesus. But if you start asking the hard questions, well, what do you do about a Hitler? What do you do if your family is being attacked? I respect that. That's different. We must come to unity by understanding the perspective of others. And that's why we're doing this series. Because I think we have fractured way too much. I think the denominations that we see in the United States today are not being faithful to Jesus in his prayer for unity.